And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, we're closing in on the 2022 NFL Draft. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker here with you. And to Steve's left is the man who will be calling the shots on Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday, Bills General Manager Brandon Bean. Thanks for joining us here, Brandon. We appreciate you stopping by. Always good to see you. The hay is in the barn, I guess, as they say, right?
Yeah, as close as it can be. You're always looking at it, and sometimes you got to just tell yourself to walk away. So I'm going to take the scouts to dinner tonight, which will be good, just to let everybody clear their head.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's interesting, too, because it's like this culmination, and like the agents are on pins and needles. The players are losing their minds,
yeah.
You know, and – you know, the GMs, you know, you guys are like, okay, here we go. And you just kind of watch for, like, stuff to happen. Like, is somebody going to go off the rails, like, because of the – because, you know, kids – I was a kid like that once.
Yeah.
And what am I going to – what am I going to do? I got, you know, and you do something stupid or – and some story comes out and, you know,
yeah.
It's like the night before Super Bowl when some guy goes, you know, over the wall.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the – it's not just them. It's also – I mean, you got – everybody in the whole business is crazy with anticipation at this point.
It's crazy what a draft. It's not even a game. What a draft. But it's the excitement of our sport. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, ultimately it is. It's that fine line of getting away and just clearing your head. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot of anticipation for players, for agents, for teams, a lot of unknowns. And, again, I feel bad for players a lot of times because they get drummed up to that they're going to be a top 10 or a top 20 pick.
Sure.
And through social media or through agents or media that's not good information, and all of a sudden, you know, you always feel bad they show the people on camera that are still sitting in the green room or mm-hmm. at their home when they were supposed to be a first rounder and now it's well into the second, and you know, you always feel bad. You know, there's a human element to this.
Yeah.
Right.
You have been very busy in the lead up to the draft, taking care of a lot of the other business with respect to your roster, free agency, you know, the Ryan Bates thing. You locked that up and got that done. Another piece of business, though, that you took care of just today, from what we understand.
Yeah, so it's that time of picking up fifth-year options. So Ed Oliver, who we took in 2019, you know, I don't think people were doubting it would happen, but we formally let his agent know this morning that we're picking that up. And so we'll now have Ed's rights, you know, this year and next year and hopefully longer.
Yeah, and also you get the chance to – you can franchise him and take him – you know, you he's a Bill for a while at least, you know.
Yeah.
Good for – and really, how much did last year affect it? Because, you know, he was a progressive player. He came in, he was a little raw and, you know, kind of finding his way, got a little better, and then last year, you know, he's been a kid that's been – a kid, I say – he's on the rise and has been on the rise since the day you drafted him.
Yeah.
And how much did last year affect, you know, your say, okay, was it a deciding year or were you pretty sure before going in or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely it made the decision much easier. You always take these decisions seriously. But Ed, if you look at – he's made strides every year, and that's what you want to see when you're picking this up. And, you know, when he came out of college at Houston, he, for 9 times out of 10, lined up dead over the center and was just – his job was to wreak havoc. Yeah. And so it's been learning an NFL game, learning the system, the one tech, the three tech – how to read blocks, how to work within a rush scheme and a rush plan. And it's sometimes you're going to have to take a guy out so that the end can loop under and he can hit the quarterback. It's just the being in sync as a group. Those are all things that Ed has really learned. And, you know, he had some sacks taken away from him last year on some penalty plays. He would have had more. So we think his best football is still ahead of him.
With respect to the draft, Brandon, the general consensus is there is no consensus, especially with, you know, the top 10 there. And people say, well, there's really not true elites or whatever, however you want to describe it. I know this is the time of year when you and your people are doing the mock drafts.
Mm-hmm.
In what you've seen unfold in your draft room going through those mock drafts, has there been as much disparity from one mock to another as maybe people are saying there could be on Thursday night?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some consensus of a certain number of players. I don't want to say that number, but
right.
That we think, you know, these guys, no matter what, are going to be off the board You know, you can take these players in any mock, whether it's our mock, the media's mocks, and say you're not going to be talking about this young man. He's going, you know, they might have the wrong team, but he's going before 25. And so unless you're willing to move up to a much higher spot, these guys are out. And so then it's kind of subtracting 25 from what's left. And that's what we've tried to give ourselves, different scenarios to, all right, what if you traded up, scenarios to what if you traded back, what would still be on the clock early in the second round. You know, we did it without trades. We did it with trades. We've tried to come up with as many scenarios. Almost every scout at one point of one pick, whether it was in the third round or the first round or Mach 3, got a chance to put my shoes on and sit in my seat and then explain right. to the room. And some of them, it came up pretty easy, like, hey, this is clearly the guy that we would all take. But we had some others that, you know, we had four or five guys here. Let's debate it through. All right, let's talk it through. Who would follow what the scout took? All right, who disagrees? And gives you a chance just to discuss some things that could happen on, you know, Friday, Thursday, you know, whatever day it is.
So essentially you're just trying to reduce the pool in terms of what could still be there when your pick's getting close.
Yeah, trying to figure out trying to give yourself as, you know, just like the coaches practice what they're going to get. They're getting the look team to give them what they're going to get. We're trying to give ourselves the best looks. Mm-hmm. What are options are we going to face? What dilemma, if I'm on the clock, you know, I've got this player on offense, this player on defense, and they both can help us. What's the best play for now, and what's the best play for long term, and talking it through?
I know you, GM, you know, you guys talk, you and other GMs talk to each other. You got friend, you know, Joe Shane, and you've got other acquaintances. Plus, now that you're 5 years into, you've interacted with almost every guy in the league, right, at some point. But you guys don't tell each other, you know, all that much about what you're thinking.
Mm-mm.
And this is a draft pool of players that is a little different. There isn't five quarterbacks who are going to the, you know, that it's a mix. What does your gut tell you how this draft is going to be? About what may happen? Is there going to be a trend? Is there going to be a lot of movement in the first round? Is there going to, you know, is there going to be some surprises? Or what's your gut tell you about maybe how this draft's going to stand out amongst others?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, it may be as few quarterbacks that go in one, you know, and I think it'll be interesting to see even by the time we pick at two, how many have gone? You know, have five gone? Have four gone? But does two go in the first round? Does three? You know, one of the guys told me the Vegas odds had it at 2.5 or something.
Right.
I was like,
that's
okay,
Vegas.
Who's the half a quarterback that's gone?
Yeah, take the over under.
But yeah, you know, I think that part of it, Steve, and just you know, I think there will be trades. I just don't think you're going to see these big trades into the top 10, you know, where every year it seems like somebody's trying to get in there, generally to get a quarterback. I don't think you're going to see that this year.
Yeah. We heard a lot after last year's draft about how much deeper the pool was going to be this year because of the kids that went back with the extra year eligibility because of COVID and all of that. Is the talk of the deeper talent pool overblown, Brandon, or is there legit talent in like rounds 3 and 4 that could provide quality contributors sooner rather than later for NFL rosters?
Yeah, I think there's guys. I think this draft is deep. There will be a cutoff point of surefire, you know, the guys making the roster, you know, any of these 32 rosters. But I do think, you know, the mid rounds will have some depth in them.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll see again how far that carries, but I do think it's probably lacks that those top guys, you know, as a total draft. But I do think it kind of makes up for it with the numbers again due to COVID.
Right, and when you get into this, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the depth of this draft. What is it that you find is going to be important for your room when you get in there and, you know, the communication's going and you got all these phone lines open to whoever? How, you know, how far out do you start thinking, okay, we need to make some calls about either moving up or down? I know that everything's on the table with you in the first round probably, but, I mean, even Sean alluded to it in his press stuff about, you know, you get into that 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 pick, and that's when – teams are starting to go, listen, if we're going to get the guy, we got to go.
Because
that's when you're kind of start to run out of first-round talent.
Mm-hmm.
the way everybody has him rated. So kind of everybody's thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, you know, you kind of go in and say, all right, this is, no matter what, we're not trading any higher. If you're talking about going up, we're not trading any higher than this. It would just cost us too much.
Right.
And so you kind of know that. And as it approaches that line, you know, if you feel it's getting thin and you want to see what it would cost, you do that. But while you're doing that, you're also preparing for when you get on the clock that let's pretend we're not excited, that we think we can get the value that we're going to take now. We think we can move down and get a similar value. So at the same time, someone's, you know, or multitude of us are connecting with teams behind us, mm-hmm. and checking with them, because ultimately, even if you're calling teams, they're going to not call you until they get on the clock to make sure they're not excited about a player, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Is there – I don't want to tell you – ask you to give up specific names, or but it has in your mocks,
mm-hmm.
have there been maybe – less than a handful of players that you've kind of gravitated towards, like no matter how the mocks you guys have run through, like 20 of them or whatever, mm-hmm. is there only like three guys or is there two guys that kind of keep coming up that you're going to have to decide between?
Not on all of them. We did it in different ways where there was a couple times where just said, hey guys, let's try and avoid this area a little bit, but it came up different ways. The guys did a good job of not picking the same pick for the Jets or the Giants or some of these to mix it up.
Yeah.
And again, we did some trades, but it worked out that we did get several different scenarios in one, and it definitely, the scenarios when we got later in the draft changed every time.
With what we saw this offseason, crazy offseason, free agency period, trade period, whatever, we saw a definite move by a lot of clubs, mainly in the AFC, to add firepower, whether it's quarterback trades, Russell Wilson coming into the conference, mm-hmm. or people paying a king's ransom for a wide receiver via trade, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, etc. Could you see that trend continuing in the draft on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, where maybe more teams are gravitating or putting a premium on players that can put points on the board, you know, receiver, breakaway, running back, whatever it is, because teams are coming quickly to the realization that if we don't have an all-world quarterback, we better get as many guys as we can that can score points, because I don't care how good our defense is, they're going to get 28 a game. I mean, the Bills are an example of that kind of a team. You got to keep up with those teams. Could you see a trend where a premium's placed on – point scorers, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, I think the game's always evolving, and, you know, certain positions at various times, how the game's played or what the rules are. Obviously, the rules tend to favor offense.
Yeah.
You know, you just look at pass interference alone, the advantage you get and how often that's not called on the offensive player, but it is called on the defensive player. I do think it will be looked at, but at this point, I think people are going to say, all right, what can I add at the draft? But you know what? Maybe if I get through Friday, I've been through three rounds, and I'm like, all right, I don't think I'm going to get the player you're talking about on offense, whether it's a tight end, a running back, a receiver. But this option's still on the table with another club to get one that I think can help me now. Then maybe that still happens. You know what I mean?
So you're thinking maybe even more by trade.
I think there's going to be people. I mean, again, we talked about it. Receivers, you know, due to 7-on-7s and all that stuff are deep. So I do think people are going to say there are receivers in this class that can help me, you know, pretty fast once they get the knowledge of the playbook.
It's almost like the value of the receiver position has reached a level that I don't think many of us anticipated. Maybe you guys with your trained eyes and all the studying that you do kind of foresaw this coming down the pike with where the game's going. But not only the value in terms of dollars and cents, because the market, I mean, the roof got blown off the receiver market.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, after quarterback, I mean, receiver's kind of inching its way up. I mean, it's sitting right behind quarterback in terms of importance for football teams.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any other position that trumps it? I mean, everybody would always say quarterback, pass rusher.
Yeah.
You want those two things on your team. receiver's not far behind now. It seems to be inching up the board even more.
It's closed the gap for sure. I mean, I wouldn't say it's past a pass rusher,
yeah.
But I definitely think, you know, playmakers, let's just call it that, playmakers, yeah. In which most of the times they end up being receivers, those touchdown scorers, those guys that, you know, get the ball in the end zone, whatever that is, to help that quarterback, young quarterbacks, or like you said, maybe a guy who's not the top tier, but he's a really good player. Well, let's get him as many weapons as possible. And there's only so many number one receivers. You know what I mean? A true number one, you try and double them, you do whatever, they can still find a way to make plays. And I think those are what you're seeing people pay premiums for.
It's a position that's reached critical mass this year. It's crazy.
One of the reasons for that is because the game has evolved to a point where I said it yesterday, you're almost not allowed to play defense anymore. I mean, the way the game is officiated and legislated and the rules changed and constantly fine-tuned for the offense, mm-hmm. Do you sense at any point in the near future or distant future where the pendulum may start to swing back?
Yeah.
And how do you stay in front of that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you got to follow the trends of the rules. And, you know, is there a point where the league says, you know what, teams are – I don't think you want to see it where teams are scoring every single drive every week. You know what I mean? There are
unless it's us against the Patriots.
There are games. I love that.
Should I not have said us? I
mean, I'm good with it.
Is that off
I'm good with it if you are.
Did I cross a line
as long as he's okay with it.
Okay. You said it, I didn't. But I would say that as the game, you know, I don't think the league wants it to where – it's impossible to play defense. You know,
right.
I think if it got to that point where every game is 40s and 50s, you know, it's fun to see that
the
here
team
and there.
Who drops a pass, loses.
Yeah,
right?
When two quarterbacks go at it, you acknowledge, you know what, that was just two quarterbacks more than it was a defense. And I still think the game is not there. But I think if it ever got to a point – then maybe that's where you'd see some things. Some of the rules to change.
Why do we see now, and I want to get back to the draft, about why do we see so much now that we've never seen in the past or as much of in the past as grabbing a player off another team and trading picks for him? We're seeing that more and more these days where teams are going for a guy who's proven it at this level.
Players for picks instead
yeah,
of
they're
picks
player,
for picks.
Yeah, instead of going picks for picks
and
drafted players, like two guys that haven't played in the league yet that you pick, plus another pick here and another pick from that team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing guys who have been proven traded for picks.
Mm-hmm.
And I get salaries, economics, some of it, but why do you think that trend is? What all went into that evolution? Because we're seeing it a little more commonly now.
Yeah, I think if you feel that there's a player out there and for whatever reason the team that he's currently on is not going to be able to afford him, it's a regime change, not as clean of a fit, maybe things haven't always worked out well there for whatever reason financially, or you know, you're seeing that. And so I think teams are more aware now so everything's out in public. You know, 15-20 years ago, how quickly did you know, you know, what's
Debo
going
Samuels
on?
Debo Samuels wanted to be traded.
Yeah,
right.
Things like that. Now a lot of these things are out in the open. And so again, that's part of how we knew that Steph was available, through social media and just checking, because we had checked before and they were like, no, but something was put out there and we checked into it. So sometimes you didn't know to check if there was a situation. Right. I think that kind of triggers things. And just the evolution of social media and nothing's sacred anymore.
I realize you're doing your prep at this point in time in terms of reaching out to other clubs. It's just part of the normal preparation in case you get in a situation where you want to move out of where you're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you call teams behind you, you call teams in front of you, say, hey, you know, what are you looking at? And they're probably calling you too. How would you characterize the level of dialogue, though? Because your spot is, you know, we hear all the time, usually most teams only have about 18 to 22 players with first-round grades, give or take a few, every year. So you're sitting where you are. That could be a popular area where people are either looking to get out or get in if somebody slides for them. So how would you characterize the level of dialogue? Has it been heavy the last few days, moderate, or has it been pretty quiet?
Yeah, I mean, it's not been heavy, but it'll pick up as we go. But there's definitely been some calls, whether it's to me directly or one of the other guys, hey, just letting you know, just talk to T-Mex, and they said they're open to moving back to our spot or vice versa. They, you know, depending on who's there, they might want to come up to 25. That's really what will go on and over the next couple of days leading up to it. And again, if you have, using your number, if you said you have, you know, we're picking at 25 and you and any team picking at 25 and you got 18 first round grades, the odds are you're going to get one if you've got that many. Because not everybody's board's the same.
Same, right.
And so it's really kind of, you can do historically a percentage. We have a good feel for how many picks we need in the second round to say we're going to get a guy at 57 that's in a second round value. So I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. People say, well, they said they only had 18.
Right, but it's not the same 18 as that team or that team or that team.
No, no. Right. No, and definitely when quarterbacks always get pumped up, you know, they may not truly have first-round grades, but people are like, man, I got to get one. I want to take a shot on this guy. Even though we had him high second, he won't be there when we pick again. I'll trade it. This quarterbacks you almost have to treat like a separate entity.
Yeah. How much different, is your philosophy in 2022 than it was in 2018 when you got a different roster? And this year, in 2022, you got – of the six or eight, seven guys you're going to draft, two of them might have a chance of making the 53. You know what I mean? To make the 53, because it's such a deep roster. It's such a, you know, quality roster as you put together. Is it a different philosophy, or you just say, listen, we got to pick the best guy, and if they make it, they make it. If they don't, it's practice squad or whatever. How does that change anything if it does at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have more spots than two, to your point. We do. I feel there's some areas that we still need to add depth. And listen, maybe it's depth to push either that person over the top or push the guy we have here a little bit higher. You know, we all know competition brings out the best. And so I'm not going to sit here and say every player that we draft is definitely going to make it, but they protect us for injury. Okay, because we can't predict if you're going to have a run of injuries at a certain position. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to just act like you're drafting today going, well, nobody on this side of the ball is going to get hurt. We have to prepare for that. We see it every year. So depth is good for competition and also for injury. And then, again, I think we do have some spots that, you know, not necessarily frontline starters, but that can come in and help us and maybe be a tick better than what we currently have.
Talking with Bills general manager Brandon Bean just a couple of days before the draft. And, Brandon, I know in a perfect world, seven quarterbacks come off the board in front of you because that's pushing everybody else down because you guys aren't in the market for a quarterback.
Yeah.
Is there any other scenario that you could foresee that would help push more of that talent that you're interested in down the board, whether it's the fact that we've got over half a dozen teams that don't even have a first-round pick? Maybe they want to get in, and maybe they're taking something that you've got no interest in. Yeah. Like, is there any other thing that can help you besides quarterbacks going in front of you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's – listen, we build the board for the Buffalo Bills. You go to another club, they're going to build it for them. Not everyone builds it the same. Some teams run 3-4. We run 4-3. They may value an outside backer that's just a rusher and not going to play the run more than we do. They may look for a two-gap D-tackle – that we're looking for a penetrating guy with rush traits. So there are different things of how we build our teams. Somebody wants more of a true Y tight end blocking. Maybe we're looking for more of a pass catch. It just – so different things like that. Character comes into play. Maybe there's some things a guy has that some teams are like, we'll be fine, we'll get him here, that maybe they take him that we don't have on our board. Medical. You know, maybe there's some things that our people have some concerns with from a longevity standpoint that somebody says, you know what, I'll roll the dice. You don't always see that in the first round, but it does happen.
Yeah. Right. So we need as many 3-4 teams in front of us as possible.
Right, exactly. let me ask you this. This is the age-old question. We probably ask you this every year you come on. You got two, you know, a balance. And if you got to take this one or this one, who do you take the scheme fit, the guy that you know has the skill set that fits the way you call defense or offense or whatever, or do you take the elite trait guy, the guy that's big, strong, fast, got all of that stuff going on, and you're just going to teach him how to run your – you know, which one do you like the most? And I know that there's a huge gray area between those two extremes.
Yeah, there is. Sometimes it can be the position, like how much time do you think? Do you have people in front of them? Like if you're – counting on a guy that has traits but still is a long way away just from time on task, you know, new system. Like, if you're needing him to play now, you may be setting him up for failure. But if you're putting him in a room that's got some good depth, now you can say we can be a little more patient with this player. So that definitely comes into question. Like, you don't want to set them up for failure. And if you're worried that they may have to play too fast, you better go with maybe slightly lesser, you know, ceiling, okay, but a higher floor. You know, he's not gonna fall off and embarrass himself.
Right.
The last one I got for you, Brandon, is because we get a lot of questions about this. We saw Trey coming out of the weight room earlier today. How's he doing? Is there any update on his progress, or just, you know, still on schedule kind of deal?
Yeah, still on schedule. I mean, he's doing everything. It's still, you know, it's so hard because, you know, he did this, you know, at Thanksgiving, and these take time. And again, you want to let – you don't want to push it. You want to – you know, he's going to push it himself. He's such a competitive, you know, young man, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get out there as quick as he can. But – you know, it's hard to put, like, he's going to be out there August the whatever. It's just – it's still too early. Yeah. There's too many tests that, in my experience, you're jumping the gun here, you know, several months out to say he's going to make it on this date.
Right. Yeah, I know, Nate, his crew kind of err on the side of caution. Because, I mean, you're not playing a game now. Like, what are you – no need to rush.
Yeah.
All right, last one for me. It's our Twitter question of the day.
Uh-oh.
Here, we're asking our fans to call in. Give us this. The Bills will have a successful draft if.
Oh, man. That's a good one.
I know. We thought it was pretty
if
good.
If Brandon Bean.
I came up with it.
If Brandon Bean doesn't screw it up.
Yeah, there we go.
And he trusts his board.
You are clever.
And,
very nice. You are clever. Very nice.
Man.
Yeah, it's going to be great. You'll probably be picking somewhere between 11 and 11:45 p.m. on Thursday night, right? I mean, 25th overall, and that's what it usually
is. So I was on the radio this morning, and they said they calculated at 11:15.
11:15, 11:20.
Yeah. So I told them I was going to try and beat the 11:30 news or whatever time.
Right. Sports is usually last.
Exactly. Whatever it is. I don't I don't stay up that late, but so-called 11.
Well, you will be Thursday night and Friday
well, you
night
can do
as
that.
Well.
You know, if you trade up, you'll beat it.
I could. Is that what you want me to do?
So no. It depends on the guy. Depends on how my night's going. Call me, and I'll let you know. Say, you know what? I want to go to bed, so why don't you go ahead and trade up.
Okay.
And
if you're getting tired, give me a text.
If I'm two whiskeys in and a couple cigars, let's go, Brandon.
He's sitting at home. We're all working.
I'm the only guy that got the night off.
Last thing, I need the over-under on how many prank calls you're going to get from Joe Shane over the course of the 3 days.
I don't know. I got to. We'll definitely talk a lot.
You got to have somebody fielding those calls, right?
He's calling my cell. He's calling me directly.
Hand the phone to somebody else.
Yeah, I may have Terry Pegula answer it.
Have him do their impression of you and then just go right back at him. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate the time.
Brandon,
so
good stuff.
So
good
close
luck.
To the draft. Good luck this week.
We
hope you hit them all out of the
park. We're all in it with you, man. We can't wait to see it. Going to be fun.
Appreciate it. We're excited.
All right. That's Bills GM Brandon Bean joining us here on One Bills Live. We'll take a break, and we'll get to your phone calls next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are, One Bills Live. 2 days to go. 2 days to go until the 2022 NFL Draft. And, Steve, I know we were talking about this before the show. I just feel like it's corner receiver at 25, provided the value is right. I don't know why I feel that way. We certainly didn't ask Brandon or tried to pin him down on any position preferences because he wouldn't answer that anyway. Right, why would he give that up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just feel like it's going one of those two ways. If the value is garbage for those two positions there, I think running back comes into play at that point in time.
Yeah.
Provided they can't get out.
I don't think even then running backs would be a guy at 25. I don't see enough of a difference between Breece Hall and Walker
the third
and the other guys on that list. I don't think there's that big a gap between where you could get one of those guys, and you may even get one of them. You'll get a good guy at 57. I wouldn't use it there either. I'm with you. Browning. I'm thinking wide receiver, cornerback. Those are the many positions. Because as the league stands now, it is an offense league.
Yeah, we just talked to Brandon about
that. It is an offense league, man. You are airing it out. And the Bills have got the guy pulling the trigger. Maximize that guy.
What's interesting, and that's why I asked Brandon the question.
The only problem is you can't put seven wide receivers on the field, right? I mean, that's the
problem. Well, right. But at the same time, I really think that this draft could show a definitive trend that leans player grades being equal, that leans towards the offensive side of the ball.
Right.
In a draft where you don't really have necessarily more than one top 10 receiver. Like Garrett Wilson's like one of the only receivers that's probably going to go in the top 10, the Ohio State kid. He might be the only one that goes in the top 10, despite the fact that there is this raised level of desperation to get playmakers on your roster. And even so, I think there's a good chance, because I think we all agree the top 10 picks are largely going to be offensive linemen and pass rushers. Like a good number, like maybe six or seven of them. You might have Sauce Gardner in there. You might have Garrett Wilson in there and maybe a quarterback. The other seven are probably going to be pass rushers and offensive tackles. So what's that doing? That's pushing more skill position players down to the Bills at 25 and the other teams as well. So that's why I'm thinking there's a pretty good chance they can get a skilled guy there, either a corner or receiver.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, if we come out of the first round Thursday night and 22 of the 32 players are on offense,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm wondering if that's going to happen. That's the trend I was trying to get at with Brandon. Right. I probably didn't ask it well enough.
It'll be two-thirds offense, and the other third is all edge rushers and corners.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The people that can stop
passing. Or you know, here's the thing. It's going to be corners, edge rushers, or interior defensive linemen, guys who you can stop the run, right? I mean, that's it. Linebackers, safeties.
Yeah.
Safeties, a lot of teams. It used to be this for the teams that I played on. Our coaching staff was like, listen, draft me a corner. If you can't play corner, we'll drop him back to safety. That's what their philosophy was. Because safety, you didn't have to have the high twist. You just had to be smart and aware. So if you draft a really smart and aware corner and he can't cut it there, move him back, he's a safety. Here we go. That's the kind of the position hierarchy you're looking at. Quarterback, if you take quarterback off the map, because that's, you know, Buffalo's set there.
Yeah.
You go to wide receiver, edge, you take left tackle out of that, and then it's interior lineman and corner. That's it. I mean, those are the spots. Everything else is like guards, centers. You can pick those guys up in, like the Bills did, in free agency.
Yep. Player grades being equal, I see, like, if a team's down to, like, for example, Philadelphia Eagles, they've drafted a receiver in the first round each of the last 2 years. They're talking about doing it again.
Yeah.
They need corners. Now, they still have two picks, but, you know.
It's like Brandon said.
If it's down to corner receiver, they may go receiver again third year in a row.
It's like Brandon said just a minute ago. He goes, it's hard. Guys who can score. Playmakers.
Point scorers. There is a premium on point scorers.
You need guys who can get in the end zone.
Because if you're playing a team like the Bills, I mean, that's why the Dolphins got Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Because he can turn a five-yard pass into a 70-yard touchdown.
You either have to stop him or you got to keep up.
And
Tyreek Hill's a chance, you know, they're going to keep up.
And I think what we saw in the playoffs last year was evidence that it doesn't matter what kind of defense you had. The Bills had number one defense in the league. They couldn't stop Kansas City.
Yeah, it's a 30-point game, but for both clubs. I mean, they're lighting it up.
I think the conclusion that a lot of teams have come to is we just got to have as much, if not more, firepower.
Yeah, we got to keep up with them.
They're going to score 28. We got to be there, too. And our quarterback isn't as good as theirs, so we better get as many weapons as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think if a grade on a corner and a grade on receiver are equal on a team's board, they're taking the receiver.
Yeah, and think about what their philosophy would be defensively if you're in that boat. What are you going to do?
Clutch and grab.
You're going to get DB. You're going to draft corners, and you're going to draft pass rushers. Everybody else is just a whatever. You're going to get a linebacker who can rush the passer or cover.
Yeah.
You don't care if he can stop the run because they ain't going to hand it off. The Bills are up here. They got this great offense. They're drafting running backs in the third round. We don't have to tackle Derrick Henry every week. We're on the division with Saquon Barkley. We're not. Those guys are
We're drafting linebackers who cover and rush. That's it. If we want to stop the run, we'll throw another defensive lineman out there. We'll go four across the board, and we'll do that, and then just guess right. I mean, that's where we're at in the NFL right now.
You heard our Twitter conversation for the day for you, because Brandon Bean answered it. Fill in the blank. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if, Brandon comically said, if Brandon Bean doesn't screw it up. But we want to know what your answer is to that fill in the blank. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if. So fill that in for us either on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live or give us a call. Open lines for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And we are wide open for the rest of the show because we had our guest Brandon Bean join us at the top of the show. So phone lines are open for you, so jump on board. Let us know what defines a successful 2022 NFL draft for the Bills for you.
Yeah.
Do you have any preferences, Steve?
No.
What would define a successful draft for you?
No. No. And in
Bean, you trust?
I'm totally focused on – we tend to do this because it's the quickest one. We're going to see it on Thursday night, that 25th pick. If it's at 25 or if it's before 25 or after 20, whatever it happens, I'm totally sitting and waiting. I can't get off corner, and I can't get off wide out,
I can't either.
It may happen, and we don't know. We don't know anything more than anybody out there listening to us or watching us do, but I feel it that way. Mock drafts are coming out, and, you know, Maddie sent us the email. I don't know if you got it. Nine mock drafts have got Jameis Williams coming to us, the Alabama wide receiver.
He's not making it.
Right.
There is no way.
22 mock drafts have Andrew Booth from Cleveland. I mean Clemson.
Yeah.
From Clemson, the corner from Clemson.
He could make it.
He might be there, and he's a dude.
Partly because of just what we said. See, I was initially encouraged when I said, you know, most of these draft analysts, and I would tend to agree, there isn't a Jamar Chase in this draft. You know, there's nobody like that that's going to go in the top five picks. Now, Garrett Wilson might go somewhere between 6 and 10, considered to be, you know, the best receiver in the class. Maybe Jameson Williams gets up there too. And then I'm thinking, does that trigger a run at receiver? Because you got a bunch of teams there that may take one.
Right.
The Eagles being one of them and a couple other teams.
Washington
needs somebody to pair with Terry McLaurin. So you say, okay, so the run happens at receiver. That means the value at 25 for the Bills may not be very good at that position. But what all those receivers are doing is pushing corners
down. Corners, yeah. And here's
so
the
they
thing.
May get a corner that they really like there.
So I think most people are seeing this like you and I do. I said 22 mock drafts per our own Maddie Glab. 22 mock drafts had Andrew Booth going to us. 17 of them had Trent McDuffie, corner from Washington. Mm. Those are the top two by far. Both those two guys are way ahead of everybody else. Then there was a couple of guys with nine, like Jameson Williams and Kyler Gordon from Washington, that kind of stuff. So those two guys, and they've seen it like we do. It's going to be a corner, and it's going to be one of the guys from a short list of people we've been talking about. But I don't care. I do not care. I know whatever he grabs is going to be somebody worth it. If it's a running back, it's because they see something or they know something. Fine. If they could get maybe the best linebacker on the board at 25,
yeah.
the way the league is now, they could get a truly freakish athlete at linebacker. They could get. We were talking today that they could get that kid from Notre Dame, the safety.
Not the one from Notre Dame, the one from Michigan.
Michigan, I'm sorry.
Daxton Hill
from Michigan.
I think he's a dark horse pick for the Bills if the corner value isn't there, because I think the kid can play corner.
He can play corner, and he's a safety. And he can run with people. He's fast.
They said they lined him up in the nickel. They lined him up at outside on the boundary.
Right.
He's a positionless secondary.
You run into a little bit of stuff like you did with Jamal Adams. Like, what is he? You know, where does he play? Can he rush the passer? Can he cover?
Yes, he's a great blitzer.
Right.
He's a great blitzer.
So he may be one of those guys that, like, you know what? This is a guy, particularly for a team like Buffalo, Brownie, who Brandon Bean has always said, listen, we hit him with the question, does it change because you've got such a deep roster? He goes, no, there's always some spots there where we can get some depth. This guy gives you depth
across the entire secondary.
Yeah. Six foot 191. And we hear about position flexibility with the Bills all the time on the offensive line and also at some other positions, like they ask the receivers to know all the positions across the board.
He'll be athletic enough to play special teams if he's not starting, so he can be active on game day.
6'1", 191. I was just watching film of him again yesterday, and I'm like, you know what? This guy makes a lot of sense if the value at corner isn't there for them. Like, let's say there's a run on corners in front of Buffalo. This guy makes a ton of sense because I think he can line up and play corner. And so you say, well, what is his role then in year one? Let's just say the Bills draft this kid, and he can't beat out Dane Jackson for the number two corner role. Now he's Dane Jackson's backup. He's Tre'Davious White's backup. He's Taron Johnson's backup because he played nickel at Michigan also.
And you still got Saran Neal on the roster. You've got some other guys. They've got six corners now.
Yeah.
So they got enough guys that they could go into training camp and feel good about it. But you're right. If you want to think outside the box, it's going to come down to a guy that maybe has some position flexibility, like one of these linebackers or a safety, like you've been talking about. When you're talking about a guy that you want to come in and start, I don't know that he's the guy that will do that.
Well, I mean,
but that's only if he's the last guy standing there. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think he's got a chance because of his versatility to be the first safety out. He's rated as the second overall safety because the other kid I was mentioning, Notre Dame, is ranked ahead of him as a safety. But he's more versatile than that kid, I think.
Yeah, and he's the kid from Notre Dame, Kyle Hamilton.
Right.
He was considered like a top five pick. Then he tested and he ran like a 4.65, and people are like, "Whoa, what's that about?" He had a horrible pro day, combine, whatever it was, and he has dropped precipitously because of it. Still a great football player. I think he could have a good career, but suddenly the predictions aren't as lofty as they once were on him. Daxton Hill is an athlete. Guy runs a 4.37.
Yeah, he's got some scoop.
6'1", 191. Pretty aggressive as a tackler, even though he doesn't have a big frame. And I know there are Bills fans that say, well, hold on a second. What do you mean he wouldn't start? We drafted Tre'Davious White back in 2017, and he started from day one. Yeah, he did, on a roster that wasn't even possessing a sixth of the talent that the roster has now. And I'll give you a perfect example. Okay, back in 1999, the Bills, who were a playoff team, drafted Antoine Winfield, 26th in round one. He came in as a rookie and did not start. He did not start. He played some nickel, and at that time, nickel defense was your third down defense. It wasn't your every down defense like it is here in Buffalo. And then he started later in the year, and he became the nickel, and then the next year he was a starter. Because it was a loaded roster, and that's what you have here. So whoever the first-round pick is for the Bills, if he doesn't start right away, don't be like, hey, how come he's not starting? He's a first-round pick. This roster's loaded.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to crack the starting lineup here, even for a first-round pick.
We noticed it when I was, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when we started to hit that roster that went to the Super Bowl a bunch of times. We had some really good players walk in. Like Bucky Brooks walked in there,
Couldn't get on the field.
The guys couldn't get on the field. And a little bit of that was the way Marv liked to construct his roster. I mean, because they cut better wide receivers than me. But because I was going to be the fifth guy, they only played three. So you'd have to have like a bus wreck on the way to the stadium for the fifth guy to get on the field. So you needed a guy that could cover kicks, and I was the guy. It was a hard roster to make, and there's some roster decisions like that that go into it as well, although they're not as stark as they were then now because you've got a 12-person practice squad and you got a 53-man roster with 47 on game day. So you've got, 65 guys. So by not being on the 53 doesn't automatically mean you have to, you're on the street. They can hang on to you if you're that good. But man, oh man, the Bills are sitting there. They got an elite roster. There's no question about it. They are
good everywhere. Even with the fact that they lost Levi Wallace,
still in good shape.
Think about it. Levi Wallace went to the number one corner. Dane Jackson came in. They were the number, and that was at Thanksgiving. They maintained their number one ranking throughout the regular season,
including against the pass.
So with Tre'Davious now, virtually what you're doing is you're taking that defense, you're trading Levi Wallace out and putting Tre'Davious White on. So you're gonna get better.
And you have Von Miller rushing the pass.
And you got Von Miller. I keep forgetting Von Miller's on our team.
We forgot that we have to break. So we got to do that now and be back with more, including your comments at 803-0550. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if. Fill in the blank for us. We're back in a moment here on One Bills Live. All right, we're back. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and
thanks to Jeff Koltenak, the director outside.
Well, chiefly his daughter.
His daughter. He brought in Girl Scout cookies today. Oh my gosh. Caramel Delights, Peanut Butter Patties, Toast Yay, which is a brand new one I've never had before. Spectacular. And then I didn't try the Thin Mint. That Thin Mints was yours, right? You like those?
I've always been a Thin Mint guy. I'm just going to say this, Steve.
The guys in the control room, we just plowed through like four boxes.
You plowed through.
In 5 minutes, they were gone.
It in fifth gear rather quickly.
Oh, my gosh. It was like a burrito.
I grew up with the old school names on all the boxes. They've changed a lot of the names so you know exactly what you're getting. Like, they call them shortbread cookies now. Those were called trefoils when I was a kid. That was the name on the box, trefoils, which was just a little shortbread cookie. Now they just call them shortbread cookies.
Right.
The Samoas were the vanilla cookies covered with caramel, rolled in toasted coconut, and striped with a rich chocolate coating.
That's what those Caramel Delights are.
Those used to be called the Samoas.
Yeah,
okay?
Thin
Mints had the same name.
Right.
Then the other one that you had.
Peanut Butter Patties.
Right. Those were called Tagalongs.
Oh.
And so I'm looking at these boxes. I'm like, well, which one is that? Because I got it seared in my brain from all the girls I went to school with in grade school bringing these to the house.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they had the Do-Si-Dos. Those were basically the peanut butter sandwiches. It was peanut butter cookies with peanut butter cream in the middle.
Right. Which ones were the white cream in between two, like, butter cookies?
I don't have that
blonde,
one on my list.
Like, just... Like,
and then they have the Savannah Smiles, crisp, zesty lemon cookies with powdered sugar on top.
Ooh.
Well, I didn't see those.
I didn't see those.
I may have to get a box.
Jeff's holding out on us. He kept those at home.
I think this was all a marketing ploy on the part of Jeff's daughter, because we'll only bring in three kinds, and then they'll be craving the ones that they didn't get. And sure enough, here we are.
I didn't even know they were selling them. Now, usually it's a season, right, where they sell them in a season, or can you just buy them all the time? I don't know. You go online, I guess. But anyway.
Delicious.
Oh, my gosh. Tremendous.
It's a fantastic service that the Girl Scouts give to our country. I mean, I know they do a lot of other good public works, but selling these might be their best act going. They would probably disagree, but...
I'm sure.
As far as my palate goes, that's where it ranks on my list.
I'm sure that they do other things other than sell.
Oh, they
cookies,
do a ton of other things. But
I
providing us with these fine baked goods.
Yeah, that
top
was,
of the list for me.
I hope there's just one or two more when I get back out there after this.
Well, conveniently, Steve, we're going to take a break here.
Right,
but when we come back, hour number two of the show, which is going to be filled with your phone calls and your tweets, as we are asking you today, what. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if. You got to fill in the blank for us. So let us know what your preferences are for the Bills and what you want them to come out of this draft with. We'll get to your answers next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are, hour number two on a Tuesday, the Tuesday before the NFL draft, as the stage is already set in Las Vegas, the floating stage that they're going to have in the Bellagio fountain.
Everybody's kind of
they're going to be shooting off those water jets when somebody gets announced, right? I mean, the little flotilla is going to come by. They're gonna be pew, pew, pew.
They said that they're going to have the draft pick come across on a boat.
Yeah.
I think that's an enormous mistake because it's boring enough watching them walk through some rat maze of lit hallways.
They better have a.
It's like, remember, I mean,
they better have an old Evan Rude 75 horsepower
right?
on there to get him there and that
get that thing up on plane. Yeah. I mean, remember, like Mac Jones, I mean, he was slow running. He was slower when he was walking to the. He looked like he was moving, but it took him forever to walk up there. I don't need that. Have the guy call his name.
Oh, they strapped the boat?
Thank you very much.
They probably figured that out.
Cooler heads prevailed. The voice of reason rang through. But think about it. They got this big room, and all of a sudden, the room is 200 yards from the stage.
Yeah.
What are you doing? They got some poor schlep with a 65-pound handheld camera.
Yeah, backing up all the
way. Backing up. 200 yards trying to stay ahead of him, and on some along the way, or Buffalo's own Dave Eichinger hands him a new era cap. He puts that on his way there, so he puts that on, keeps walking, makes a turn, okay, keeps walking. Okay, now there he is, there's the crowd, okay, now we're keeps walking. Finally, he reaches the commit. Come on! Just have him walk out of a door so we can be done with this. Ah,
yeah.
Right? I hate that production value. Just say the guy's name. Boom. He like drops down from the ceiling. Poof, there. Off. Go. Give him his jersey. Push him off the stage. Give me the next pick.
Okay.
Ah, man. This on the clock.
Move it along.
Yeah. And some guy on Twitter today made me laugh. He goes, if I wanted to see 32 picks in 3 hours, I just watched Jameis Winston play.
I'm gonna. That's pretty good. That's a good one. I also saw on Twitter, after the list was publicized of the 20-some-odd prospects that are actually attending the draft.
I think that's a big mistake to go there this year.
There are about 4 or 5.
May be there
that
day
may
three.
Still be in there on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, think about that. I don't want to be one of those guys.
Oof.
And I get it, too.
No,
listen.
I'd be doing the Joe Thomas thing. I'd be on a boat fishing somewhere.
Right. See, here's the thing. And I get it. These guys, somebody's pumping sunshine up their skirt. I get
it.
They're saying, yeah. And here's the thing.
Largely agent-driven.
But think about it, Brownie. You're a young 20. You want to be there. You want to be one of those guys.
Want
so
your moment
bad.
In the sun.
You want your moment. You want to give it to your mom and your dad and your family and your buddies.
Do it
the
at
school.
Home.
You want to be there. And be the guy that hugs Roger Goodell. You just want to be that.
Yeah.
It's such a, and you can't do it if you say, I don't know if I'm going to, I'm, you know what? It's worth saying, listen, I'm going to take the chance. I want to see it. I want to see if I can do that.
Right.
You know? So they kind of believe all that stuff that's, you know, somebody's talking that doesn't know. I get it, but man, oh man, you don't want to be a guy still sitting in there.
That's especially when you're the last guy.
Ooh.
I remember Aaron Rodgers waited a long time sitting there. Who was the guy that went to day two, now that I'm trying to think of? He went through the entire first round, and he went in the second round. I'll have to look it up. I'll find it when I get a chance. In the meantime, we go to the tweet sheet where we get your answers on the fill-in-the-blank. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft, fill-in-the-blank, after that. Brad leads us off, and Tweet Sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Brad says, delete the blank line, which basically means the Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft.
There you go,
He's
Brad.
Just as clever as Brandon Meaness.
Very, okay.
So he's resolutely confident.
Yeah, and I think
that
a lot
the Bills
of
will draft
there.
Successfully. Yeah, there's enough of a track record here with Bean.
But the fun is getting there, too. If you guess the exact guy that Brandon Bean's going to pick, can't you make the claim you're just as smart as he is?
Well, every blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, that's We don't have.
That's what fans want.
We haven't invested the time, the travel. You know, we haven't done any of that.
It's blind
luck.
We're
throwing darts.
Exactly.
We're all throwing darts,
but
except
still,
for the guys that actually do the work.
But still, that's what everybody's trying to do. They want to be the guy that's thinking along the lines.
Yeah, I get it.
I get it.
From Bill's mailman. He says, the Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if they just keep drafting the way they've done in the past. The recent past, yes. I would concur with that sentiment. It's amazing, Steve, isn't it, how people questioning this front office has just kind of melted away with each passing year?
Yeah.
Right? Like, think about that for a second. I think Ed Oliver was the last time we heard anybody with a dissenting opinion on a Bills draft pick. Think about this. Last year, the Bills drafted two pass rushers and two offensive tackles with their first four picks. And the complaints on our show were minimal. Minimal. Think about that.
Yeah. And for good reason.
In Bean, they trust.
Well, here's the thing. Like, all the way back to 2017, you got Milano, Dawkins, Tre'Davious White, and Zay Jones. And then, of course, you had...
That was before Bean was on board.
That was like Nathan Peterman and Tanner Vallejo at the bottom of the draft. The next year, they've got...
Josh Tremaine,
Harrison, Taron, Saran...
That was a good draft.
Wyatt Teller, and Ray McCloud. And Austin Prohl got released.
That's the only guy that's still not in the league.
Yeah.
Austin Prohl.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's in 2018. That's 4 years ago. All right. 2019, you got Ed Oliver, Cody Ford, Devin Singletary, Dawson Knox, Vashawn Joseph, Jaquan Johnson, Daryl Johnson, who
got traded.
Who played for the Bills, and then Tommy Sweeney.
Everybody's in the league there except for Vashawn Joseph.
That's right. And then, of course, 2 years ago, A.J. Epinesa, Zach Moss, Gabriel Davis, Jake Fromm, Tyler Bass, Isaiah Hodgins, Dane Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
They got some guys there.
Pretty good day three picks, huh? Mm-hmm. Tyler Bass, Isaiah Hodgins, Dane Jackson. Not bad.
That's not bad. Okay, then last year, of course, Greg Rousseau, Boogie Basham, Spencer Brown, Tommy Doyle. The top three, two of the top three started.
Yep.
We're starters at the end of the year. Marquez Stevenson came on at the end of the year. Damar Hamlin, Rashad Wild Goose, and Jack Anderson. Those
two of the guys got poached.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
On the practice squad.
There's a lot in there to be happy about. And here's the thing. When you get down to the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, I mean, every team looks like that. You get the occasional guys like, wow, look who they found down there. But
but Steve, I'm telling you, in years past, anything after the fourth round, I mean, the Bills more often than not didn't even get a guy.
Right.
The last late round pick that I can recall, from the drought years that did anything was Stevie Johnson, seventh round pick.
Yeah, now you've got Dane
three straight 1,000 yards.
Dane Jackson down there, Isaiah Hodgins still hanging around trying to get on the field.
And that was 2008.
Tommy Sweeney's still on this club from the 2019 drafted seventh rounder, last guy they picked, 228 overall. So it was – there's a lot to be said for this Twitter question we've asked. The Bills will have a successful draft if – and it's like, just listen to Brandon, if they listen to Brandon.
Yeah.
You know?
So going back to the tweet sheet, the Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft because of Brandon Bean, says Del Reed.
Yeah.
A lot of Bean love.
And why not?
He's earned it.
He's earned it. And he did it quick, too.
Well.
I get this, too. I don't know what the balance he strikes. We asked him about traits and about scheme fit and all of that.
Well, the reason it's tough to predict is because he's done both in the first round. If you think about it, because as we were saying yesterday, Greg Rousseau, elite physical traits. Tremaine Edmonds, elite physical traits. Josh Allen, elite physical traits. Tre'Davious White,
scheme fit. All pro.
Technician, right? Like, polished technician. Ed Oliver, undersized, not elite physical traits from a size, height, and weight standpoint at all.
Right.
So he has gone the other way before at the top of his draft. And I think that leaves an air of unpredictability here, which is why I thought your question was a good one. I wasn't expecting to get a definitive answer, but I give you credit for asking it.
Right.
And that was some of the debate we were posing yesterday during What's for Lunch, when we said, hey, cornerback values there. They got to choose between Andrew Booth and Kaiir Elam. Elam is the physical freak, and Booth is the scheme fit. Eight ways to Sunday. He fits everything they do defensively. Which way do you go?
Right.
And it's going to be – if those two guys are on the board and there isn't value at receiver, it's going to be very compelling to see where they land with that.
Yeah, and I know this too. After they make these picks with these guys, between two guys, both guys are on the board, you find out too that the guy we thought was not on there. You know what I mean? For some reason they had –
That could very well be. Could very well be. There might be some kind of medical that we don't know about.
Yeah.
There could be some character background thing that we don't know about.
Whatever it is, they're down on the guy. They're not equal. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, people are – that Georgia wide receiver, George Pickens, a lot of people are high on him. He has an injury history. That's number one. Number two, he also got thrown out of a game because he was fighting somebody on the field. So people are like, whoa, what's that about? So that's all – I mean, that's all been vetted. But we don't know where all these teams have come down on it.
Yeah, you said that Pickens kid who came back from the ACL and played in their final game at Georgia. Final four games. He was just an outstanding player. And you heard that, you know, somebody told you that guy is a dog.
Yeah.
And he is a guy who can really go. He's got a pro attitude and a lot of confidence and that kind of thing.
Before he got hurt, he had 82 catches for 1,240 yards and 8 touchdowns as a sophomore.
Yeah.
So –
That's
the guy produced.
Yeah,
but there's an injury history there.
There's an injury history there, and there is. And when you is he a dog or is he a rabid dog?
Like, did he get in a fight and get thrown out of the game because he can't control his emotions, or is it a guy that is just so intense? And you want the guy more often than not, I would say, Steve. NFL coaches would prefer to have a guy they got to pull the reins in on than kick in the butt, right?
Oh,
every week?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, here's the thing,
from a disposition standpoint.
When they always give you this cop-out thing where a guy's out of control, emotional, as he's passionate, you know. Yeah, you don't buy it. It's undisciplined, and it's idiotic when you let your emotions get the best of you. These guys, most of these guys have played 100 games, and at some point, you're always going to be disappointed. You're always going to be embarrassed. You're always going to make a big mistake or a catastrophic mistake. You're always going to do something like that at some point in your career. If you never learn how to handle that, it's a problem. Because the NFL will do nothing if not humble you quick. And if you can't take that, if you lash out, if your frustration gets you penalties or gets you a fight or whatever, it's a problem. It's a problem. And particularly when you get into your 20s, if you haven't learned that yet, you weren't playing at a high enough level, I don't think. So,
but people are going to – and this is where Brandon was explaining to us in the first hour, which I completely understood, just because the Bills may or may not – whatever the number is – have 22 players with first-round grades – and the Cleveland Browns have 22 players with first-round grades. It's not the same 22 players.
They only overlap like 12 guys.
That's certainly possible.
Right.
So now it's not the same 22 players. It could be upwards of 40 players between the two teams. And now you expand that out to 32 teams, you could be talking about 50, 60 some-odd players.
Yes.
That are graded with first-round grades for some teams and not for others. So they say, oh, how do you have enough people to fill the first round? You're always going to have enough people to fill the first round because everybody's grades are different.
It's like I told you.
Because they're not asking. The primary question for every team in the draft is not, can this guy play in the NFL for us? Can this guy play in the NFL? Does this guy fit the Bills and what we do and what we look for in a player? And some of the time, the answer is going to be no. But it might be yes for another team.
Yeah, or the fact that, and it's a huge gray area that we're trying to describe here, and it's pretty obvious, you know, what we're trying to do is, yeah, this guy's got, like this guy Pickens we were just talking about, huge upside, but
He's got an injury history. Is he fragile? Not that he's not tough, but he's fragile.
What do our doctors say about his
range? What do they say about him? And what do they say about the fact that he was in a fight and all that? How'd the rehab go with his injury? Was he into it, or was he just kind of waiting around?
Was he back relatively soon? Did it take longer than expected?
Right.
All of that.
That's exactly right. And all the great. Now, also, how smart is the guy? Did they just give him like three routes because that's all he could handle? Or was he one of those guys that's a study film junkie? He's all about it. All of that stuff goes into the mix. Now, all that stuff that is you can't see on the football field gets weighed against another guy over here who is a little smaller but faster and quicker, plays out of the slot more, does all this, and he is a junkie. He is he's got some of the same stuff. Plus, you know, he's a Phi Beta Kappa, gets straight A's. You know, he's a military
team
kid.
Team captain.
He's up at 5 a.m. every morning, that kind of guy, right? He's team captain for four straight years. Those are the kind of things you weigh, the intangibles. Is this guy going to get a – when he signs a contract, is he going to get a fire lit under him, or is he going to take it out of gear?
Yeah.
Has he accomplished his goal, or has he just been motivated by it? So that's the kind of thing that you're looking at. So you got two guys playing the same spot, and those are the things you have to weigh. And you have to have gone out and tried to find out about that stuff.
Yeah.
It's an enormous project.
Nota on the tweet sheet says, the Buffalo Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft. If in the first four rounds we have drafted a DB, wide receiver, and interior offensive lineman, the extra pick could be a linebacker or a running back. I'd go along with that.
Yeah, that...
DB, wide receiver, interior offensive line after the first 2 days? I'd be pretty shocked with that.
Sure, but I'll say this, too. We would all be happy about it if they're all got, you know, and I'm not saying all of us would know all four of those guys that you're talking about. Who knows? But it almost seems too perfect for all of us out here, which means it's probably not going to happen the way we think because some value is going to get out of whack and they're going to have to take, like, two corners and one wide receiver and a linebacker and not get an interior offensive line. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I see what you're saying. The order is important there. Is it going to be DB, wide receiver, then an interior offensive lineman, or is it going to be an interior offensive lineman, then a DB, then a wide receiver? And what we hear about these guys and what we can find out about them as players after the pick will tell us a lot about how happy we're going to be.
Yeah. There are some interesting guard candidates in the pool. Like for the first 2 days, guys that played like right tackle,
right,
but project to guard. There's some big old hosses in this.
There's some dudes
in this class.
At 25, you're going to get a guy.
Well, I'm hoping they don't take a guard at 25. I'd prefer they get a premium position player there.
I think you're right. I think it's one of the money positions. It's one of those things we've talked about. But
we talked about Kenyon Green from Texas A&M, one of the nastiest blockers in the whole class, I think.
Zion Johnson.
Those guys are probably first-rounders. But then you got the kid from Georgia, Jamari Salyer, played both tackle and guard spots at UGA. Excuse me, manned left tackle last year. He's got 33 5/8-inch arms, 10-inch hands. And then there's this kid from Kentucky, played right tackle, Darian Kennard. 35-inch arms, Steve, 11 1/4-inch hands. Massive frame, like thick throughout. You know one of those guys?
Yep.
I liked him. He looked pretty good. So there's going to be some guys.
There will be some guys.
Even this UCLA kid, Sean Ryan. 6'4.5", 321. Doesn't have a lot of great measurables outside of 11 1/8-inch hands. Played 3 years at left tackle, but people think his best position is inside a guard because he does have a little bit shorter arms. But this kid's footwork, his slide and redirect, he can pull. I'm wondering, Steve, what the guard criteria is from Aaron Cromer. Because with a new offensive line coach, maybe some tweaks to the scheme, you know, does the criteria for what you're looking for in a guard change? You know, obviously that's been communicated to the personnel department, so they know what they should be looking for.
Right.
But do they want mobile guys, or do they want road graders that are just going to plow things straight ahead? Yeah. That's going to be the interesting question. And if they do draft a guard, that could give us a peek into the kind of player they want to fill this roster out with to fit the scheme and the blocking technique.
I'll say this, though. I'm pretty sure, too, that Aaron Cromer probably had a voice in signing Bates back and you know,
yeah,
all these guys
that
they've
got.
And Bates can move. Yeah, Bates is good. He's a smart guy. So that might give you a tip as to, you know, the fact that they match that offer sheet. It will be interesting. This offensive line, I think they have invested in it, and I think they're going to continue to. I think that's where it all starts, and I think they realize that. The fact that the way they drafted last year screams that, and I don't know that that's an exaggeration or whether it, you know, truly was just a little bit of a quirk where they took two edge rushers and then two offensive linemen, two tackles in the same draft in their first four picks. A year before that, they did the same thing. And a year before that, they did the same thing.
Yeah.
That says a lot about where they believe their importance is. It's the big guys up front on both sides.
They're never going to stop investing in both lines.
It's a smart way to go. Those are the guys that are hard to find.
And Bean and McDermott are in lockstep on that philosophy.
Those genetic guys like the Jordan Davises of this draft, you know, the guys that are 6'6", 340 pounds. This Evan Neal, this offensive tackle from Alabama, the guy, he's 330 pounds, and he jumps up on a 48-inch platform and does the splits and forward and behind. I mean,
that was a good video.
Are you joking? I mean, where do they find these guys? And I'll say this, too. I saw it today. Some of the guys in Evan Neal's camp are dropping some tape against him against Georgia, playing left tackle. Nobody got a whiff of that quarterback. All those guys at Georgia took turns, and they had no shot getting around Evan Neal. That guy's going to make a lot of money and play for a long time.
That's why I'm telling you, I think it could be as many as 7 out of the first 10 picks are going to be offensive tackles and pass rushers. Maybe you get one receiver in there.
I don't know. I think there could be some core. I think
one receiver, one corner, and maybe a quarterback.
They're going to be – yes, they'll be – think about that. There's not going to be a linebacker taken. There's not going to be a safety taken. There'll be corners, edge rushers, and tackles.
Maybe one wide out, maybe one quarterback.
Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So you could have
– it's corners, left tackles, edge rushers. And then sprinkle in whoever you want.
And 7 out of the 10 are probably going to be edge rushers and tackles.
Put that on the whiteboard.
Okay. We'll do that. Back to the tweet sheet. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if they find a starting CB2, says Chris. Whether that's due to trading up, standing pat, or a free agent signing. Joe Hayden, for example.
I'll say.
They may have a starting CB2 on their roster already in Dane Jackson. But, yeah, it's like Brandon said here last hour. We welcome bringing in
competition
in any position. If not to start, this is what he said, if not to start, to raise the play of the guy who is starting.
That's right. I mean, it's not – I mean, when you got to really hump it to keep your job, everybody gets better. Everybody gets better. And, you know, I just – I'll do it again. I did this the other day, and I'll do it again. It's Elijah Griffin, Tim Harris, Dane Jackson, Taron Johnson, Cam Lewis, Nick McCloud, Saran Neal, Tredavious White. So they've got all those guys are playing corner for them. Now they're not
two of those guys have never played in a regular season NFL game.
Right? They're not household names, but Taron Johnson and Tredavious White are pretty good starts. And Dane Jackson, who finished up last year.
Your top three are pretty good.
You got to feel pretty good about those guys.
But
you're going to have to bring something to the table to get on the field.
More and more teams are gravitating towards 11 personnel, pass-catching tight ends. Just having a good top three isn't enough anymore.
Because somebody's going to go get a, you know, tweak an ankle or something. Come
teams
off the field
go four wide.
I don't think we're to the point yet where we're going to go back and say, okay, we're going to go run and shoot. We're going to go four wide, one back, let's go, kind of thing. And the running back splits out. I don't think teams will do that. Hmm. Maybe once in a while. Yeah, maybe a handful of – I don't know. Maybe somebody does it as a change-up, but we're not there yet. But, man, oh, man, we're getting close.
Yeah. Jack on the tweet sheet is thinking right along the lines with us here, Steve. The Bills will have a successful 2022 NFL draft if they get an impact wide receiver or corner at pick 25, and then on day two find the other, and a running back or interior offensive lineman who can take over and start defensive offensively or eventually.
Running back or an interior offensive line who eventually starts, yeah.
I mean, that is right up the alley. That's right where I'm thinking. Jack is on the same wavelength.
They're going to get – yeah, I think it's impossible to think the Bills don't come out of this draft with a wideout and a corner. Maybe two of one.
Well, I mean, the value of the board.
Maybe two of one of the other, one of the other, two of the other.
The value of the board is the only thing that prevents that, right?
Right. But I'm with you.
If the value's right, though, it should happen.
And it makes sense because everybody who's tweeting at us has been listening to our show, and we've been pounding this drum for months now. Since they came out of free agency without one of those major free agent corners signing, you got to think that's priority one. But I think too, the guys I just read there, I think they don't have a problem with Dane Jackson taking over and coming into the season with him.
Yeah,
certainly.
So maybe you wait a little.
Either way you slice it, Dane Jackson's going to be a guy who's going to probably be out there repping.
Going to be one of your top three on the outside.
He's going to be repping number one at training camp, mini camp.
Yeah,
and whoever this guy is, if they do pick a corner at 25, it's going to start with him being CB3.
Yeah, or four if you count
Terry.
Yeah. All right,
so we'll see.
We got to take a break here. When we come back, we'll finish up your thoughts on the tweet sheet and maybe a little NFL true/false. We'll get to that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Kasker with you. As you heard on our air, GM Brandon Bean broke the news live that the Bills had picked up the fifth-year option on Ed Oliver. He is now, let me count these up, he is only the fourth player in the 2019 draft first round to have his fifth-year option exercised.
Oh, how about that? I didn't know that.
Joining Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams, who just did it earlier today as well, and Noah Fant, the Seattle Seahawks, exercised it after the trade. He was part of the Russell Wilson trade.
Right. He came from Denver.
Right. So those are the four players so far in the first round of the 2019 draft,
to be fair,
that have had their fifth-year options exercised.
Brandon was on our show early in the offseason. He says probably going to happen.
Yeah, it was a formality,
right.
I think.
And I think most fans knew it, and you know, it's just like, okay.
But now it's official, so that's
official.
Cool.
So good for Ed. He gets, and the last year of his contract is guaranteed because of this.
Right.
Unless they do an extension, which you know probably going to happen too. So good stuff. Congratulations to Ed Oliver. He has emerged as a high motor guy, and you think how young the Bills defense is for being a number one defense. Brown, he's pretty young. Ed, Greg Rousseau, Boogie Basham, Tremaine Edmonds is still young. He's like younger than Ed, almost, right?
Boogie Basham is older than Tremaine Edmonds.
Right. Think about that. So they're really young, really. One of the older guys on the team, of course, the safeties, Hyde and Poyer, are older guys.
Mm-hmm.
But think how young the team is. Milano's one of the old guys.
Yeah. Ed Oliver, incidentally, tweeted shortly after the news broke here on One Bills Live about his fifth-year option. Ed tweets, "Got that monkey off my back. Feel like I can just go play now."
Yeah.
So that's good. So good news here at One Bills Drive today concerning Ed Oliver's future. He's tied up for this year and for next year. And we'll see where it goes. You know, the cap's going to go up considerably, so who knows? Maybe
right.
They tear up year five and do a full-blown extension come this time next year. Who knows? But
right.
You've locked in, you know, his services.
And you forget, you know, the thing about this, the Bills have been so good, and I know a lot of people – a lot of Bills fans didn't get a chance to see, and it's really a tragic part of what the pandemic was all about. I did the games on radio because Eric Wood couldn't come. Eric, you know, regular guy, Eric couldn't get up here. Wood couldn't get up here to do the games because of logistics of COVID and all of that stuff. So I got a chance to do this team in 2020. And Ed was, you know, part of that crew. The step up that that team took from 2019 to 2020, in large part to Josh Allen, but all over the field, was unbelievable. It was astonishing. And they did it in front of an empty stadium at home until the playoffs. It was unbelievable the transformation that happened and the kind of critical mass that the roster got to where all of a sudden everybody got elevated. You know, you had the right guy, you know, the quarterback hit, the D-line hit, you know, the offensive line or the defense, you know, they took a step back from 18 when they were like number one or two or three, and they were like, you know, just good. The whole team took a huge step forward, and I remember Ed being a part of it. And you see, going back to last year when Ed really took a step forward, see the highlights, and it's hard to remember all of them. He's been, I think, Ed Oliver as much as any draft. Well, Josh is the headliner, but as much as any guy other than Josh, you know, he's been kind of that guy who showed up and all the team was good right away.
Yeah.
You know, Josh, we all went through the growing pains with Josh, and Tremaine Edmonds, kind of the same thing. Tre'Davious White, Trey was good right from the get, but you know, he's a cornerback and there's a lot of things going on. Ed Oliver, as much as anybody, has been the face of the team when they drafted him, and it's like, okay, he needs to help us, and you know, he did. He came in and helped. Good for him. He's going to be around for a while.
There is more news on the fifth-year option front. Panthers GM Scott Fitterer says they have exercised the fifth-year option on pass rusher Brian Burns. So he is now the fifth player who got his fifth-year option exercised from the 2019 draft. Here's another tidbit. GM Scott Fitterer of the Panthers also said there are, quote, a couple of quarterbacks he would feel comfortable taking at number six. They hold the sixth pick, obviously. He also noted there are 3 to 4 teams he's heard from that are serious about trading up to six. Panthers would love to get more picks and trade back if their must-have prospects are off the board. So right. Carolina could be a mover and shaker at six.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see who that is that wants to move up to six. That's got to be.
Who wants to get up there and for what? Usually,
right.
Those.
That's got to be a quarterback.
Usually, yes. Like, does Seattle.
In this draft?
Does Seattle want to move up from 9 to 6 to get their number one guy?
That's where you say, in this economy, they're going to move up.
I don't know that you need to. I mean, there's always the risk that somebody leapfrogs you, but Minnesota's not doing that. Washington doesn't need to. You know,
Pittsburgh does? No way.
Jets
jumping
don't.
All the way up.
No,
20?
That's too far. Yeah, that's
20
too far.
To whatever.
20 to 6, yeah.
Or maybe they get, maybe if it does get down to like 6.
This is also the lying season. Let's not forget that. So Fitterer could be fanning
the
flames. The
team that's got to get by is Seattle at 9. That's the team. If Carolina's not going to pick him.
Right, if Carolina doesn't take a quarterback, Seattle doesn't take a quarterback, somebody would be calling the Jets right away and saying, hey, can we come up there? And yeah, that could happen.
That could happen because then it's not outrageous. If you get a guy in the top 10 at quarterback, you're going to get incredible pressure to start him right away, even if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers with Mitch Trubisky sitting there. They're going to get an incredible amount of pressure to play him. If you're a team like a Chicago Bears and want to, you know, get back in there. You're going to get incredible pressure to play the guy. So if he drops far enough, or if one of those guys drops far enough, and I think the guy that you really have to keep your eye on is Malik Willis, the quarterback, because he's the one with the traits, right? He's the one that's the Josh Allen of this
class. He's only 6 foot, but yes.
But he's got the big arm.
Big arm, can run.
And he can run. He's got all the stuff. He's going to put the ball wherever you want it. He's got a limitation with his height, but that's, you know, that's not a limitation. It's just a characteristic.
It's a fact.
It's a trait, right. It's not like he used to be 6'6", and now he's only 6 foot. So he's, you know. That's the guy, I think, that if it goes and some of these teams like his traits, which they will, they'll say, Like, what do you think, Brownie? If he gets past 15.
Malik Willis?
Yeah.
I don't think he gets past 15.
All right. If he does get past 15, that's a spot where you can take him and say, okay, just hold on for a minute. You know what I mean? Sit behind.
Oh, you think the pressure would not be to start him right
now? Right. The pressure's not there.
When the Bills drafted E.J. Manuel at 16th overall, the plan was for Kevin Cobb to start.
Exactly.
And then he would kind of learn on the fly, and then Kevin Cobb got a concussion in the third preseason game, and it was a concussion that ended his career because it was his, I think, fifth concussion in 7 years. And
didn't he?
He also slipped on a mat at training camp and sprained his knee. But that wasn't what.
You know, that's where we used to live, Brownie, right there.
That is where we
used to live. That is the city of heartbreak.
Steve, I'm telling you, when I was writing as the editor of Bill's Digest – I cannot tell you how many training camp issue covers had three quarterbacks on it saying, who's it going to be? And it's a compelling question, but it's not a question I want to have
I'm
to
telling
answer.
I'm telling you this.
And I'm glad we don't have
all right,
to
anymore. Let's just say that, and this may be a topic for another day, but you and I are general manager.
Yeah.
What is our gestation period for a quarterback? When we look at him, if he doesn't grab – How long does it get before he gives – you know what I mean? How far do you take this guy? Yeah. Like I told you yesterday, John Elway, for all those years, it was like he was washing through
rinse,
those guys
wash,
like
repeat.
Yesterday's socks.
Or wash, rinse, repeat.
Wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
And I'm a big proponent of that.
I think it varies because if your roster is not in a position to support the quarterback, you're probably apt to give him a little more time to get more of the pieces around him, right? But that's on you to do that. Do it as quickly as possible. But I would say, I don't know, you're a season and a half? Like,
no. You're not wasting another half a season. Because if you waste a season and a half, that's
what
two.
What are the Dolphins doing?
That's two.
Dolphins going on year three here.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
the greatest, right?
I mean, I don't know. Like, you could argue when Tua got there, they didn't have everything they needed to help him. I mean, only now are they formulating an offensive line of any respectable quality. So, I mean.
I don't know. Listen, I get it. The guy was at a football factory. He won a national championship. He came in as a freshman, and Brian Daboll calls the play that gives him the national championship. You got to know. That's the thing, too. You got to know what you're looking at. And I've heard all kinds of stories, and you know, we've heard all outlandish things about the way Miami Dolphins did things about you know, wanting to tank and paying their coach to tank and all of that. So I doesn't strike me as out of the ordinary down there. But unless you're all on the same page and trying to pull the same direction, I mean, what are you looking at? If your quarterback is not going to have some traits that can play at the NFL level, you're always going to be working around that. If he can't make all the throws, what are you doing? You can't play the whole game.
Right.
And you're going to draft Tua when you got Justin Herbert sitting there. I mean, what game do you think you're playing? Are you playing Vanderbilt 8 times a year and then you play the Bills and the Patriots? No. You're playing the Bills, the Patriots, the Chargers, the Raiders, Chiefs, the Ravens, the Steelers.
The Bengals.
You don't get any of those Vanderbilt games or those Kentucky football games.
Yeah. Not anymore.
You don't get those. You got to play. You got to have a guy that can sling it.
Yeah.
That's why they have the combine. That's why they go out and look at these guys.
Not everybody gets it. We have to take a break. Steve and I with some final thoughts from your tweet sheet answers next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. David on the tweet sheet says, I think it would be successful if we could draft San Diego State's Matt Araiza. We need a punter that can make a difference when our offense is forced to punt, hopefully not too often. David N. says, Bills will have a successful draft if they don't get obsessed with a need taking chances on a pick like running back versus accurate assessment projection. Like their obsession with finding a Von Miller-type defense effect, they took Boogie Basham over offensive lineman Creed Humphrey, especially after just taking Greg Rousseau and D-linemen so many times prior. So that guy is not a fan of the doubling up. when they went best player available last year.
Right.
But here's the thing.
Creed Humphrey is a good player, but they like Boogie better.
Yeah.
And proved it by taking him ahead after they'd just taken a guy ahead of him. So, yeah, same position.
Final mock draft watch tomorrow when we have Maddie Glad back in. Some interesting numbers there. We'll see you at 1:00.